Hi, welcome to the April 6th edition of the Irrelevant Rock and Roll and Music Show. There's been a few changes while you're away. First, we have moved completely to our bi-weekly format. We have rolled the crossbars back into the main part of the show, and we'll be alternating between bad albums by good bands and, for what it's worth, show by show. There will also be a special show each month with a guest host, which will focus on a certain aspect of our varied musical culture. This month, our first program will be dedicated to the blues, the cornerstone and continual driving force of rock and roll. Okay, you got that? Let's kickstart this week's show. This is Music Off the Radar. And for your listening pleasure, this is the Live PA Wizards, The New Deal. Okay, it's time for Crossfire, and tonight we're going to look at what we're calling the new progressives, and two bands we're looking at, Mars Volta, a personal favorite of Crafty's, and Threshold. And one school is influenced by later Frank Zappa, later King Crimson, and Miles Davis sort of era Bitches Brew, and the other is influenced by Yes, Genesis, and Dream Theater, and this is where these two new schools of progressives are coming from. The album by Mars Volta is called Bedlam for Goliath, and Crafty is going to get you into it right now.
Well, I looked forward to this album with anticipation. As the first time I heard Mars Volta years ago, I was sitting in a bar, and not only were they playing it, they were playing it on vinyl, And I just sat there. This is the first new band that I've liked in ages. First, I thought Rush had somehow made this totally, you know, youth orientated, fresh approach to their music. Not that it sounds like Rush, but there's a little bit of falsetto going on there, and definitely the crazy, really crazy ass drumming. And I walked up, and they says, "No, this is a new band. They're called Mars Volta." And I just went, "Wow, it's about time," because I'm always looking to try to find a new band that, you know, and this was right in the middle of time of the Pearl Jam syndrome, you know, where every single new band had a baritone singer moaning away to open D chords. And here's these guys that I don't think they were using bar chords on the first album. Since then, they have definitely they've switched up and lost most of their rhythm section and tend to play with session players. And so, which brings me up to the new album, which I didn't like. Maybe because when I first heard them, they were actually a hybrid, not of either one school. John split it up there, like Jay Hoskins split it up there, and they had melodies and they had songs and they had crazy playing. I'm not hearing the melody of this. I hear just almost out there for out there's sake. I just like, and the intro just starts up. Like on the last album, you know, it had this really slow, tripped out intro that, you know, allowed you to get ready for the fury that was coming. And this just starts right into it. And it's like if, you know, like they'd forgotten how to write a song or something. I got to give it some more listens because I want to like this band so much. I think I can really feel the loss of the rhythm section and the fact that they're playing either with session players that no longer have any input into the co-writing. And these two have just gone completely, you know, I was a King Crimson fan with Greg Lake and not so much the instrumentals. Although I respected them, I liked the melody and the progressive playing. I don't just like progressive playing. It's just noodling. I mean, Miles Davis was the first jazz album I liked. And Bitches Brew. And I love that album to this day. But, you know, I certainly went on to learn to love his more melodic stuff. And when you combine the two, I think that's when you've got something special. When you go either, it's just an over-pompous pop music, or it's just overindulgence, and that's what it is.
I almost wanted this album to come with a commentary, like a DVD, to tell me why a lot of the song titles were what they were and what the lyrics were about. Right out of the gate, it's almost sounding like a bit of like Smashing Pumpkins in the vocal style.
Gone is that rich falsetto, and is now, yes, replaced by a, yet we don't need another whiny. Oh, I agree. I if I didn't know better, I would have thought it was Smashing Pumpkins doing Mars Volta.
Yeah, you know, the first song, I'm going to try and pronounce it here, Ab Per In Kula, literally jumps out of the speakers. It's like you push the button down on the tape recorder and it just, it's there, you know? And it has, there's a lot of songs on the album, including that opening song, that feature breakdowns, you know, favored by mathcore bands and stuff like that. Both Cedric and Omar are firing on all cylinders during this album. I mean, they really are. I mean, it's just, they're firing all the time. I found this album really, really tiring to listen to. In fact, I couldn't listen to it all in one go. It was like, listen to a couple songs, and then you would go away, and you had to, like, you know, do the laundry and come back and listen to another song, or you had to go to the store, or even listen to something that was a little less demanding. A lot of later period King Crimson, a lot of Robert Fripp influence going through this album. To some, it's going to sound like, quoting you, Crafty, from an early review, who will not mention the artist you said about, a lot of racket. And to others, it's going to sound like a fusion of John Coltrane, Bitches Brew, Miles Davis, all taking their cue from like Robert Fripp. Do I think they're really talented? Yes. Do I think this music is really interesting? Yes. Could I listen to it as a steady musical diet? No way. I just couldn't do it. I'm sorry. I think there's a lot of really amazing things happening on this album, but I just think a lot of it's just all happening at once. And I saw them do a live version of Goliath on MTV in Canada. And they were, you know, Cedric was just like rolling all over the stage and yelping into the microphone. And it was just, it's just too much. They've just taken it, you know, that point too far, you know, to have normal everyday people like me and sometimes you, to appreciate what's happening. I'm sure that, you know, and maybe you can elaborate on this, Crafty. I'm sure musicians who really enjoy really intricate guitar patterns and different things like that really would appreciate a lot of this album. But as a listener, it just tires me out. I need to go do my laundry.
I think not, actually. I think a lot of people, it's almost self-indulgence for self-indulgence sake. It's certainly gone over into the, and pushed the meters up on the wankometer. It's because I also, the nature of the band is, I mean, as good as they are, they're not that good to pull that off as extreme instrumentalists, and they're good, but even with Coltrane, you listen to a lot of live Coltrane and it will suck. You can only listen to a bit of it, you know. It's like, whoa, it's intense. It must have been amazing to watch, and the first time you hear it, you go, holy shit, what's all this? And then you put it on again, you go, ooh, whoa, I wonder, why do I want to listen to that again? And I think also with this band is that they were a hybrid of progressive melodic and progressive playing, and that's what made the first couple albums great. And it's what the lack of it is what makes this album not great, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, the next album that we're going to look at is the band is called Threshold, and the album is called Dead Reckoning. And this band has been progressing for a while. It is that school we talked about of Yes, Genesis, and especially Dream Theater. But they're not mimicking them. They're taking their cues from them and some influences, but they're not carbon copying, and they really are their own band. This is one of Brave Words and Bloody Knuckles' top 10 picks of the year, sitting beside Rush's Snakes and Arrows and Nightwish's Dark Passion Play. It's a great album. It's not quite as progressive as the Nightwish album, but it's carrying some of the same emotional clout. Big clean vocals from the vocalist Mac, especially on the songs Slipstream and Elusive. Plenty of layered instruments all the way through, lots of hooks and grooves throughout, especially on the opener, right through to the closer. I can't even read that. I'm not going to bother. Right through to the closer. Solid guitar work from Carl Groom, the guitarist, but it never gets too busy. The keyboards, for the most part, tend to be more textural. There is the last song on the album, which they're used in a more sort of enveloping sort of form, but usually there's more texture to pump up the song. My only drawback of the album, Crafty, is the drums. It's got this live drum sound that I have just not been enjoying for a long time. I mean, I went and saw Judas Priest and Scott Travis had this drum sound, and it doesn't crack. It doesn't sizzle. It's there. And, you know, not to hit the drummer. The drummer is a really good, steady drummer. And he's got, you know, and some nice inventive fills and stuff like that. It's nothing to do with the performance. It's just the production of how the drums sound. I just want more crack in my drums and less thud. But other than that, I think it's a terrific album. I just think it's a great album, and it's a page turner. Like every song, you just want to hear another song, you want to hear another song, you want to hear another song.
Well, I agree that it's funny because I like a live drum sound, but not with this music. It's a distracting, and I think, you know, it's one of those things to stop it. I agree, and I'm hoping that, like, again, like in the day and age of the single songs, it'd be hard pressed to grab, you know, what's your favorite track off this. You know, it is an album, and it's an album that plays as an album, and and also song, the like song of the lengths and style. I mean, it's not, you're not going to hear this very likely on an iPod commercial, though it could definitely be in there. And I don't see it topping over, like you're not going to hear it in a rock dance club or something like that. This is the whole thing with this music, is where is it going to get played? But this was the same situation when King Crimson and Genesis, I mean, yes, used to get booed off stage in their early Nottingham performances in England as being whatever, but it is, you know, booed off stage. I think this band's going to make their reputation by their live performance. Yeah, there's going to be, you know, mostly guys there. But, you know, if they could just, you know, come up with a Court of the Kings and Queen, you know, King or something like that, either 24th century schizo man, something that hooks in somebody's heads. I mean, they're there. Like anything, you know, this is we're just getting this music now. But this scene, the one thing I do like about it is that they do add little things to it. It's like the progressive rock, the new progressives won't be progressive if it's just, you know, mimicking old Genesis. And yes, it's just going to be derivative progressive. And that's not what these guys are about, I don't think. I think, you know, they're building on what they've learned, and that's what's going to make it progressive, which is what I originally was drawn to Mars Volta, because they just, you know, let's take all this and add it and do it now. And I think these guys have got the you know, I agree that the keyboard player is more like the guy from Genesis, as opposed to, say, Rick Wakeman. He's not so much a virtuoso keyboard player. But it's a hot sound.
But he plays well. He does play really well. He's just restrained. He's feeding like the song and the composition more than like taking it over.
Well, no, and I agree. That was one of the glories of Genesis. I mean, he wasn't the greatest keyboard player in the world either, but he was very good. But his stuff is memorable, and the choice of tones. And that's the only thing. The only thing that seemed to throw this album off is for some reason, I found, like you did, that the drum sound didn't really gel with the sound of the records. I mean, on its own, it's a great drum sound, but not for this. It's like, you know, if you listen to this, maybe that's their push, you know, this thing, and this is what you have to listen to again, and listen to it as a whole, and just accept it. You know, we'll know when the next album comes out and it has the same drum sound, that's what you're going to be listening to. And if you like the band, you're going to have to get used to it.
You're listening to Radio 2069, Rock and Beyond.
Okay, all right. It's time for that part of the show we really love, where we get to talk about an album that we really think deserves to be played again because it's been hidden in someone's closet or under someone's rug or, you know, in someone's trunk somewhere. And we're going to pull it out and we're going to tell you about it. And hopefully you're going to go and pick it up and give it a listen. And tonight, Crafty has something really, really special.
The album is called Lenny Bro, The Velvet Touch of Lenny Bro Live. Recorded in 1969 at Manny's Manhole, I believe it was the place of recording. Shelley's Manhole in Hollywood, California. This is easily his peaking album. This is definitely the one that he's at the top of his game. It shows all his various styles. The band's hot. The recording's brilliant. You can literally hear the people ordering drinks and clinking of glasses, and something you're not hearing this week, by the way. Thing, it opens up with the tuning time, where he does a 1 minute 49 second tune up that is one of the most melodic tune up songs you'll ever hear. I mean, Jimi Hendrix used to have some interesting little tune up styles, but this takes the cake. And the tie-in with Hendrix is kind of funny, that in the mid 70s there, you know, I was totally wrapped up in you know, the Jimmy Page, Eric Clapton, Jimi Hendrix thing, and the rest of them. And this guitar player, who's rhythm guitar player, Jeff Glassman, gave me the album and says, here, you should listen to this. And I remember putting it on going, well, you know, I'm just in the trios. Like, this is, you know, this is you know, two guitar players. And he goes, no, that's only one guitar player. Is he had this technique which he would pluck out the bass lines with one finger, play tap out chords, and then play these harmonics and play and sound like just as brilliant like two or three guitar players at once. He's very well versed in flamenco and Spanish styles, and even there's an album, a song on the album that Indian Reflections for Rave, where he actually does acoustic guitar feedback and does all these sort of open detunings and really gets, you know, a sitar thing going there. The album is much recorded live, doesn't totally play out like a live album. There's it jumps around. He does some solo stuff and it does jump around, and that's what I think maybe stopped him originally from any super mainstream success, or which you know he did achieve, but he didn't achieve the levels of as a Wes Montgomery, or certainly not who's the other guy?
You're talking about Ringo Jang?
No, I'm not going back that far. But
Charlie Christian?
No, not even that far. After Wes Montgomery, what's his name now? Had the big hit in the middle of '70s, really smaltzy. Did a lot of scat singing. Oh my God, I can't remember. I blocked out his name.
George Benson.
George Benson, yeah. Like, and Benson's going on with a huge success.
This Masquerade.
Yeah, and here's Lenny Bro, you know, bumming money up on Harbour Street in Ontario. He's originally from Winnipeg, and in one incident, he gave one lesson or so, or a couple of lessons to Randy Bachman. I think from one lesson, he wrote Undone, which is very interesting. Back to the album, it's really... You could just sit there and listen to this album over and over again and learn so many different things from it. There's, as I said, there's East Indian influences, traditional jazz. But even when he does traditional jazz, like on Mercy Mercy, he's adding so much with the extra plucking and fingers and the harmonics, these beautiful, beautiful flourishes that will just come out of nowhere. Like sometimes just the last few seconds of a song of just these beautiful little flourishes. For years, I don't think anyone played that. If you look at the album cover, it's, you know, you might say, well, who's this guy? Eddie Van Halen won't want to be because he's got his hands tapped on it. And there was one guy out of California, I think, Green Spoon, that sort of adapted Lenny's style. I'd heard about him, and he did it. And since then, of course, you've had your Stanley Jordans and quite a few other people. The tap, there's a whole tap. You know, it's a whole other thing when people start playing the guitar with the other hand in a different way. Like, of course, in flamenco playing, they do this a lot, and in classical playing. But I think Lenny is probably the first example of it in jazz music. I don't think anyone was really, really doing it like he does.
The Irrelevant Rock and Roll and Music Show. Music off the radar. We'll be right back.
Okay, that once again was a new deal from the album This Is Live and the track Dopamine. And Crafty's here to tell you all about them.
All right. Well, it's a band that's been around for a while, but still making inroads. They're called the New Deal. Not exactly a rock band, but they definitely rock out. And they formed from a jam at the now notorious Comfort Zone. And it basically a drummer, a bass player, a keyboard player. And they don't really use any loops. As much as it's loop sounding music, they don't use any really drum machine loops or keyboard loops. But they do sound very much in the sense of house breakbeat music. The album is called The New Deal. It was recorded in 2001 in various parts of the United States and in Montreal. And then, of course, enhanced in the studio. It's a great record to put on for just, you know, cleaning your house or just chilling out on a hot day. The synth sounds are really organic and analog, real live drums. And because there's enough of a difference in the playing, it doesn't have that overkill, repetitive feel that, you know, a lot of traditional house music would to a lot of people. So people that like funk and soul and, of course, the acid jazz scene will and do take to this band quite readily. As for getting into individual songs, it's mostly instrumental, so it's kind of irrelevant, but good ambient funk electronic band called The New Deal, and they supposedly have over 120 live shows available online, as well as about a half a dozen or a dozen officially released records, including one that was signed to Jive Electro, which did not cross over the way it was anticipated. Of course, they're now signed to their own little label, and they distribute their music on their own, and it's worth checking out.
Well, you can find out about them on Wikipedia. Just put in The New Deal on Wikipedia, and they have all the links and everything to go to. And sometimes that's the best way to find out about a new band. If a new band is listed on Wikipedia, just put in The New Deal on Wikipedia, and a bunch of stuff will come up, including Franklin D. Roosevelt. And, you know, you don't choose that one. You choose the one that says, you know, interesting band. And you go there, and they'll tell you a whole bunch of places to get their music.
You've been listening to the Irrelevant Rock and Roll and Music Show. I mean, what did you think you were listening to? I mean, really?